Well, it's all we've been talking about, and now the whole world wants to know what Alaskans think of Sarah Palin. Do we ourselves even know? Is there any consensus at all? Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Still in shock? I don't know about you, but I'm hearing from all sorts of friends and family I haven't heard from in years asking me what people here think. Our number toll-free 1-800-478-8255 and Anchorage a local call 550-8422. Email live at talk@aprn.org. Tell us your thoughts on Sarah Palin today on Talk of Alaska, statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by BP, proud to support public broadcasting in Alaska.
Hi, I'm John Acty from Bethel. When I want to know what's happening in Alaska, I listen to the Alaska Public Radio Network.
Well, this is in no way going to be a news show because, attitude is prevailing over fact at this point. And we're just here to hear what you have to say about the extraordinary situation we find ourselves in. And it keeps changing. Alaska suddenly is right out in front in national news. Really, it's kind of been building up. If you think about the corruption trials and so forth, it's been building up. The deadliest catch, Alaska's profile rising in the rest of the nation. Now everybody paying attention with the naming of Sarah Palin to be John McCain's running mate. What kind of move is this for the Republican Party for McCain? Will it pay off? Did they really vet her as carefully as they claim that they did? These are factual things we really don't, we're not qualified to answer. If you're going to call up and ask questions on this show, we're not going to get anywhere. We want to know what you think. What is your response to this? Some people are, just takes their breath away. We say, well, how can this be? She is no way qualified. Others say, this is just great that a soccer mom has got to this point. This is a restoring rationality in our country, and it's much needed. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. There are people who say, look, she's abandoning us. She can't do this to us. The attitude seems to run all over the place, and we'd like to know what you think. Joining us for this discussion is Gerald McBeth. He's professor of political science at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, joining us by phone. Hello, Jerry. How are you doing?
Nice to talk to you, Steve. Nice to be on your show.
Well, you yesterday participated in a public radio show trying to analyze this from down in the Midwest. What kind of attitudes were going around from there that kind of surprised you, things they asked you that you wouldn't have expected?
Well, it was a mostly liberal audience, and they were opposed primarily to Palin because she's a social conservative, and there were a few supportive of the choice. The one that really intrigued me was from a woman who said she had 7 children. She was a lawyer, active in PTA activities and the like, and she said it was irresponsible for Palin to have allowed herself to be a vice presidential nominee for the Republican Party. How was she going to take care of her kids? She had a child with Down syndrome, and that struck me as very odd. It struck me as devaluing women. We don't ask these kinds of questions about men when they're running for high office, how many kids they have, what kind of family responsibilities they have, whether they would be shifting those responsibilities elsewhere or lacking faith to their family. But the questions come up about Palin. So,
well, what do you think about all the personal stuff that is suddenly coming out? We kind of have gotten used to a media climate these days, a kind of, scorching light of media attention that wipes out all privacy. The Clintons certainly experienced this, and now the Palin family and the Heath family are getting it too. What do you make of that? I mean, it just seems kind of, in a sense, some of this personal information really needs to be in the public record because it pertains to whatever job performance and so forth, but it seems like sometimes it gets way beyond that.
Well, I think so, but that's been a pattern and a trend for the last 20 years or so, questions about, you know, she's got a daughter who's pregnant, and so what? I mean, what does that have to do with her role on a national ticket? But I think the difference is the role that blogs are playing now. So that gives each and every one of us an opportunity to influence what could be an ongoing national and international debate. And, of course, the blogs, they're not reviewed critically. We don't know whether the statements coming from blogs are accurate or inaccurate. And there are thousands of them out there. And that's a critical difference, it seems to me.
Well, of course, when you take a situation of a daughter facing a difficult choice about her own pregnancy, and then a vice presidential nominee who is pro-life, it kind of blends in with the job description, don't you think?
Well, it does. But again, to feast on that in the context of a campaign for national high office, it seems to me is misplacing the focus that ought to be there. I think the issue is we know whether her position is consistent, and definitely is. I mean, she is pro-life, and she proudly announced that her daughter was going to carry the fetus to term, and then happily announced that the daughter was going to get married. And, you know, young people don't always get married these days, and so that's consistent with the pro-family and the pro-life agenda.
Yeah, well, I will admit, you know, personally, if I was picturing this going on in my own family, you know, I would really want my daughter to have the space to make this decision and for this young man to make that decision on their own. But holy mackerel, the pressure from outside is just must have been incredible.
Well, yes, that's surely the case, and we just don't know, you know, who made the ultimate decision.
Yeah.
And aren't likely to.
Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255-478-TALK. Well, that's kind of an interesting issue right there, is the family has requested the media to respect the privacy. And I think we all sort of are inclined to do that, but we also want to do our jobs. And we also are seeing all this outside media suddenly showing up in Alaska, and they're going to be turning up every rock they possibly can. We all know that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to
be. Well, and also in the process, Alaska is getting national media attention. And it's through the corruption investigations and the trials and then the convictions, any number of people said, we wish that people would be thinking about Alaska as something other than a corrupt oil state. And now the focus is on our state's leader, our popular governor, and she's enthusiastic about Alaska. That's obvious from the speech she made in Ohio the other day, and I'm sure she's going to continue that in the campaign itself, and she's going to be focusing on aspects of life in Alaska. And I hope what she picks up in her campaign is the extent to which we have opportunities here in Alaska that used to be available throughout the United States, but are gradually becoming fewer and fewer.
Well, that would be something. Our guest is Gerald McBeth, political science professor, University of Alaska, Fairbanks, 1-800-478-8255, to join our conversation. What do you make of Sarah Palin as a vice presidential candidate? If you're calling from Anchorage, it's a local call at 550-8422, and we're ready for your call right now. Jerry, the first blush that came out about this is that it's aimed at picking up disaffected Hillary Clinton supporters out there in the electorate. I'm wondering what you make of that.
Well, certainly that's one part of the appeal, but, you know, and of course the announcement coming just the day after Barack Obama's acceptance speech at the Democratic National Convention, and they upstaged coverage of Obama, and it focused on Palin, and who was essentially a new person in American national politics. And so it's part of a very aggressive presidential campaign, and a very tightly fought one on both sides. And the Republicans need to shore up their basic constituency and reach out as much as they can if they expect to win the election. And that's why they selected Palin, not just to pick up disgruntled Hillary supporters. Maybe they'll get a few, not that many, but certainly they're going to be picking up on votes from women who see in Sarah Palin a fairly common and ordinary a soccer mom, a hockey mom, who has accomplished a great deal in a real short space of years by actively inserting herself into the political process.
Yeah, you know, that there is a, I mean, feminism is a, it's not like it hasn't existed for a long time, but as a political force that actually started getting results, you don't go back more than a century, really. And it can be argued, I think, that one of the biggest outcomes of the whole social rebellion of the 60s was empowering women, that that's one of the things that actually succeeded out of all this. And you go back to all the BPW types and the women who have been trying to break through the glass ceiling, you know, ever since they were teenagers and told to stick to the typing pool. You're looking at maybe a bigger constituency than the Democrats realize.
Well, yes, it's very large, and Republicans, moderates, and some Democrats are going to be looking at this as a very positive sign, a change to the complex character of American national politics, because after all, the parties have to nominate women for them to have the opportunity to run in a race and to win. And it's the parties, and especially the Republican Party at the national level, that's been reluctant to put women up into high places. And so at the gubernatorial level, we've had a number of Republican women governors in Congress. We have Republican women senators, but there are more Democrats and also in the House. But it's really at the presidential, the vice presidential level. And now the Republican Party has changed its view and perspective and adopted a woman as a candidate for the vice presidency. That is a truly a major change.
You know, what really resonated with me, Jerry, was when you said a tightly fought election battle, and one in which I think we may see more abrupt turns, you know, where we saw this eclipsing Obama's very successful speech. And then we also immediately saw them calling off most of the first day of the Republican convention so they could go down there and tour an emergency response center in the hurricane path. You know, once again, an innovative, almost improvisatory move.
Well, again, the country is, we have parties that are more polarized than at any point in the last 50 years or more, perhaps the last 100 years. We have a nation that is polarized. The parties just aren't standing out there by themselves. They're representing people, and the people are polarized across several issues. And so we've had very competitive national elections, presidential elections, since 2000, 2004, and 2008, maybe, in fact, the most competitive of a lot. People don't like that. They don't like the divisiveness. They don't like the sharpness of the political rhetoric. On the other hand, to have competitive races is important, it seems to me, for the survival of our system of governance.
Let's start in with the calls here, and they're coming from the interior. Here's Shelley joins the program from Delta Junction. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Shelley.
Thank you, Steve. Yeah, I want to talk about, I'm just very, very disturbed by the recklessness of the McCain campaign choosing someone as inexperienced as Sarah Palin and then dressing it up like she's had these major accomplishments and she's this, you know, maverick Republican. And I want to say that Frank Murkowski was the least popular government nationally ever. He had the lowest approval ratings ever. And so practically anyone could have followed Murkowski and, you know, and been welcomed. So she, you know, after having, you know, a sort of mediocre education in Idaho and being the mayor of a teeny town, it's like she's propelled by, you know, stepping on the backs of other Republicans that once helped her, you know, takes the governorship at a time when, you know, practically anyone could have. And then she, at her acceptance speech, talked about how she's going to, you know, that Americans don't, especially Alaskans, don't want handouts. They're, she's going to, you know, they're going to pull themselves up by the bootstraps and work hard. And so while she's cutting money that would provide jobs, she's handing out $1,200 on top of our largest dividend ever. I mean, that's a vote-getting, you know, handout, if ever I could see one. And then she talks about this open and transparent government, that, and now she's, you know, trying to block the investigation into her alleged abuse of power. And I would like to point out to people that the people who supported Bush talked about he's just an average guy, the kind of guy you'd like to go have a beer with, you know, except he stopped drinking. But, and they're saying that about Palin. And I personally would like someone with, not the kind of people that I socialize with, I love them dearly, I don't want to see them as president. I want to see someone that has, that believes in, that global warming is a problem, that believes that this economy we're having is not working for most Americans. You know, someone with some intelligence and some foresight, not someone, you know, who's a hockey mom or dad. You know, I want someone who really is smart and can, and I hope that people will stop talking about, you know, Palin's family, Palin's image. Oh, the other thing I wanted to mention is that Republicans are supposedly against affirmative action. I mean, is this, was Palin chosen for her, you know, stellar governing skills, her, you know, long, extensive background in management? No, she was chosen because she's an attractive woman.
Well, I think all that is very well put. And to the list of things she's been lucky about, you can also add that she hasn't really had to answer some really tough questions to pin her exact positions down on things, you know, some of these issues about public funding for religious education and gay marriage and so forth. Not really to pin her down politically.
I don't think in the process, however, you should devalue the first 2 years she's had in office. She's been a very effective governor. Few governors in our history have done as much in their first 2 years in office as she has. She defeated Murkowski, and he was not the least popular. He was the second least popular governor at the time he was defeated, but she also defeated John Binkley in the Republican primary. She defeated Tony Knowles, a popular former Democratic governor of Alaska, in the general election. And then she set about, you know, sort of cleaning up the mess, the ethics legislation that she asked the legislature to do. The change of the petroleum production tax, that was an absolutely critical and necessary move. And she brought the legislature into special session and rode herd on them until they finished it. As I've said repeatedly, she was like an angry school marm with unruly children. And then the budget process. She's gone through two budget cycles, and she, even though we had, you know, money all over the streets in Alaska, she cut 10% of the capital budget in 2 years. Very unpopular actions, including among Republican legislators. So this is a person who's had a short career in high office as a governor of a state, but a very effective career. And please tell me out there, the executive level experience of John McCain, of Barack Obama, of Joe Biden. These are individuals whose distinguished careers are all in the Senate, where they gather and talk. And she has an executive background.
Yes, well, Barack Obama and McCain's campaign, they're managing hundreds of thousands of people right now in their campaigns. There's huge
good
budget.
Point.
There's, you know, they're using high-tech devices and galvanizing hundreds of thousands of people. I'd like to point out, I'd go back to the handouts, is because this kind of strikes close to home, is my son, who's a college student, had a summer job with DOT. And there, you know, that's usually a budget that's been planned out ahead of time. And his work was cut short because of a cut in funding to DOT. So this idea that Alaskans are willing to work hard is good, but they do need some funding to do that. And then so to take that away and cut services when the state is rolling in money to cut services to really needy people and then give a handout of $1,200. And I'd like to add that that $1,200 is going to go to a lot of people that won't be here for winter. They're going to move or just go out for winter because they're getting it on last year's dividend, whereas people who are living here and going to have to deal with this fuel crisis, they won't be getting it. So this is like, this is just this uneven, unequal pandering that money could have helped the state do some long-term projects that would, you know, help the fuel crisis in the long term.
So all right, Shelley. Well, I think, in fairness on that last issue, that this was a political process that they needed to get something short-term done because otherwise people wouldn't be able to get through the winter, and this was the shot that was politically doable. But I would like to get to a bunch of other callers here, and I really appreciate your call. I think you articulated views that a number of other people have.
Thank you.
All right, Shelley. Thank you very much. Let's go down to Bethel and Patrick. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Patrick.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, there should be maybe you might want to put in a rule not to take any calls from whiny liberals, whiny loony liberals. And there's going to be probably quite a few of them calling in. You know why? Because there's fear in the Democratic Party. All these liberals are afraid. They feel threatened by Sarah Palin. You know, the Democrats had their chance to choose a female, but Barack Obama and his bad judgment, bad decision-making, which is good for us, good for the Republicans, he chose a 40-year insider that has over 10,000 votes in the Senate. You know, this excellent judgment by John McCain, it's a slam dunk. It's a home run choosing Sarah Palin.
Is it Hail Mary?
The conservative base. She's pro-life, pro-gun.
Yeah, we know all that, Patrick. Patrick, is it a Hail Mary, too? Was it a gamble?
It's all the above. No, it's not a gamble. It's not a gamble. And you know what? The loony liberals are going to call in crying, saying it is. They're all backtracking right now. And you know what? The others that are against Sarah Palin and calling in, they get that $1,200 check, they need to give it back. Absolutely give it back.
All right, Patrick, thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
All right. That was Patrick and Bethel. Let's go to Anchorage and Marianne. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Marianne.
Hi. I got a couple of things. I'll be quick as I can. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you for being quick as you can.
Well, the VP position, it's a learned position, I think, anyway. And I think Joe Biden, he looks pretty good on TV. Why not have an attractive-looking candidate? You know, you're going to see him a lot. Let's have somebody who looks kind of nice, if you have your choice. I think a lot of people are sour grapes. It's like she won the lottery, and everybody's jealous. Well, this woman worked hard. She positioned herself. She was, you know, I don't think it's going to take a genius to be vice president. The politics of either side is going to be, you're going to have your advisors. It's not like they rule the country. There's a bunch of people who make this happen.
You know, the way I'm thinking about, do you ever hear of Cactus Jack Garner?
No.
He was vice president under Franklin Roosevelt. And of course you didn't hear about him because he never did anything. But he was not remotely qualified to be president of the United States.
And he is the one who said, that the vice presidency isn't worth a bucket of warm spit.
Yeah, it's like the forgotten man always. But it's their vice presidents who do take it and run with it and make it something. And I think Sarah Palin will. And the other thing is that, you know, there's a lot of families where the woman is a career person and the husband helps. Palins probably have their child care in place from being in the governor's office and doing what she did. I don't think the governor's office was a 9-to-5 where she got to go home and nurture her children all that much. So that's already in place. And if it were a man, again, oh, gosh, there wouldn't be one comment. Because Sarah Palin is a woman, she's expected to be there nurturing her children 24/7, you know, and it's kind of unfair. But I think that the choice was brilliant. Look what it's done. I mean, how many 8,000 logs on ADN, and everybody's talking about it. They're not talking about politics anymore. They're talking about the person. You know, I mean, kind of a, it makes you look at him. And I haven't made up my mind yet, but I just don't think that it's, I think good for her. This is America. You know, she's not going to be an embarrassment to Alaska. You know, like some candidates would.
All right, Marianne. You know?
So thanks. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you. So you can tell that it's stimulating for Marianne. Let's go to Thorn Bay. And Bob, welcome to Talk of Alaska, Bob. Hello, Bob. Are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. You're on Talk of Alaska here with Jerry Macbeth and Steve Heimel. We're talking about Sarah Palin. What do you say?
Yes, sir. I spent time up in the valley in Anchorage working from 98 to 2005. My home's in Southeast, and I got to watch Miss Palin as she rose up in the ranks, so to speak, and she rose up on her own merits. And I think it's really nifty. We got ourselves, as one commentator called her, a pistol. It's going to be 44. I don't know if that's karmic or not. I think she's going to be a damn fine vice president. She stands by her word. She's a confident, competent individual. And I think we just shook up this whole election again with her. And I'm going, smile.
All right. Bob from Thorn Bay, thanks for your call.
All righty. Have a good one, bud.
Yes, sir. It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking about the choice of Sarah Palin as vice presidential candidate. Let's try to get another one in before the break here. David in Anchorage, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for the show. I'm not real thrilled with the pick. I guess for me, my initial reaction was, I mean, I hear this expression all the time. It just, I was just kind of thought it was a joke. And it just didn't pass, like, the red face test. I hear people use that all the time. Now I actually really know what it means. And to me, it's not really experience so much. I'll give her all the gubernatorial experience. And I actually don't dislike her as a governor. But what I'm concerned about is her range of interest and her, her ability to converse on things. I've been strapped to my computer since Friday, and I've learned actually more about my computer than I ever thought I would ever know. Like, I'm going to all these sites and stuff, and I'm running into these clips of her saying, I haven't really thought about the Iraq War very much, and I don't know what the VP does. You got to explain it to me before I actually sign up for the job. And I'm thinking, my God, there was a picture of her in the paper with John McCain yesterday. I think it was yesterday in the ADN. And McCain's kind of clutching his chest. And it was a great shot. And she's standing right behind him. And I thought, man, that's the picture I don't want to see. I have no personal animus toward her. I kind of like what she's doing as governor and like to keep her as governor to let her finish her one issue, which is the oil tax stuff. And I would disagree with your commentator that she's done one thing as governor. That's about it. And I like what she's doing there. But to have her, I think she has a very parochial view of the world that has no business in, being one seat away from being the most powerful person in the world. To me, that's the red face test that doesn't pass. And I understand, I feel very protective of her and her kid right now. I'm like reading all this stuff about the kid. And I'm like, leave the kid alone, man. She's some kid from Wasilla, I just don't want her as vice president.
All right, David, thank you.
I would say on that point that, I believe that Sarah Palin doesn't like opera. She probably doesn't listen to it, and I do. I don't know if that would, in my view, disqualify her from being a vice presidential candidate. She has been quoted widely as saying she doesn't know what the vice president does. Very few people know actually what the vice president does, and the vice president's sort of job function depends entirely on the president and what the president assigns to the vice president.
Except for presiding over the Senate.
Except for presiding over the Senate, and that's always done by junior senators. The vice president's there only to break a tie.
Thank you. Jerry Macbeth, professor of political science, University of Alaska Fairbanks, is our guest as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
APRN will be providing special coverage of the 50th anniversary of Alaska statehood. For sponsorship information, call 550-8400.
And suddenly here is Alaska in the middle of the national political stage. Journalists from all over the country are coming up to Alaska and trying to dig up dirt on Sarah Palin or looking for promotional material to help the public know a little bit more about this woman who has been nominated or has been named as John McCain's vice presidential choice. The Republican convention is going on right now. She's going to speak to the nation tomorrow night. She's preparing for that right now. The campaign has provided her with a new public relations advisor, and it's all gotten very interesting. Sarah Palin is our subject on Talk of Alaska today. Gerald McBeth, political science professor, is our guest from Fairbanks, and the telephone number is 1-800-478-8255. We're seeing wide diversity of opinions here, wouldn't you say, Jerry?
Oh, yes. Almost a full spectrum. That's healthy.
Yes. Let's go to Phyllis, who joins the program from Fairbanks. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Phyllis.
Thanks for having me. My point may be moot now. I think the ship has sailed with the caller from Bethel, but my point would have been, I am a Democrat. I don't think I'm whiny. I also admire and respect Sarah Palin. And the good news is I think Obama will win. So we'll get a keeper as governor of the state of Alaska. What concerns me is nationally not bringing the level of politics down to name-calling and vilifying individuals on a personal level. I think there's adult conversations that need to be had concerning different platforms, and you can support a candidate because you believe in his or her platforms, and that doesn't mean you should diminish the opponent. I mean, it just seems crazy to me. So that would have been my point. I do, in fact, think she's got chutzpah. I admire her. I don't have any problem with her nomination as vice president.
So what's your advice to liberals who want to see Obama elected is to refrain from being too whiny about, refrain from showing yourself to be a latte whining liberal in criticizing Sarah Palin?
I don't think either party should be, bringing politics down to in name-calling and Karl Rovian-type tactics. I mean, these are issues of consequence, and they should be dealt with in a serious manner, not name-calling and mudslinging and, ridiculous commercials. I mean, there's platforms, there's issues to be seriously discussed. And, you can support your candidate without diminishing the opponent. I mean, I think that's just what the United States has to come to grips with in the 21st century, and I don't think that's happened so far.
Are you looking forward to a debate between Biden and Palin?
Sure. And I think she handles herself well. I mean, I can admire and respect her and still not vote for her,
All right, Phyllis.
There's a lot of issues I disagree with her on, Pebble mine, polar bears drowning, those kinds of things, But it doesn't mean that I think that she should take personal, name calling and vilification. I mean, that's just nonsense.
All right. Thank you.
And that, by the way, is a part of American politics. Going back certainly to democratization, 19th century, mudslinging, innuendo, that's all part and parcel of it, but certainly we need to be focusing on the issues. One thing to keep in mind is that Palin is the vice presidential candidate, not the presidential, and the vice presidential candidate, who that person might happen to be, typically doesn't influence the outcome of the tickets more than 0.5% to 1%. Maybe this year it'll be different. Certainly I think it's going to be different in Alaska. But in the other states, as the campaign progresses, the focus is going to be on McCain and Obama, and that's where it should be.
Wow. Yeah, that's one of the wilder conspiracy theories I've heard, is that it's a battle over the oil and that both the Democrats and Republicans want to get control of Alaska because of the oil. That's yet another one. I mean, on the web, these things spread like viruses, these rumors and innuendos. It's really quite amazing, and especially at a time where the conventional media the MSM, if you will, is really quite weakened because advertising keeps going down and moving over to the web as well. Mm. And so they don't have the reporting strength they once did, and they're searching for where their future is going to be. And so we don't have what we might have had some years ago as a sort of a buttress of media conventionality that has largely eroded, speaking from my point of view, in the media. Let's go to Cease, joins the program from North Pole. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Cease.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
My comment this morning is, first, I agree with Senator Obama when he said that the family should be left out of it. I admire and I respect Sarah Palin as our governor for the state of Alaska. She's done some awesome things. She's taken on some situations and tried to make life better for the people in Alaska. You don't always have to agree with her methods or her means. And as far as the energy, $1,200, if our legislators had listened to her and went for the vouchers, for energy vouchers, then it wouldn't have been people who were not here or serving somewhere else or not present right now in the state of Alaska. It was get funds to our people so that they could have oil and heat in their homes, and that's what our governor tried to do. And just like being a vice president, she would have to work with a body of people, advisors, legislators, to get anything implemented. I think she can take this task on because she took the task on here in Alaska, and she did implement and took on some situations that were stinky. And just because she followed our Mr. Murkowski doesn't mean that she wasn't welcome. Change was welcome. That's what we're about right now. Change is welcome in our whole world. And we have to think outside the box. And if when Shirley Chisholm and Barbara Jordan were in Congress doing these things, they were black females trying to make a dent in that glass ceiling. So I think we need to pay homage where homage is due. But I think our governor's daughter is dealing with her situation. And I remember when it was my daughter and our family dealing with that same situation. I was proud of my daughter when she came and told me. And there was never any thought of any other thing but my daughter carrying our grandson, who is 14 now, to full term. Excellent, awesome student, and a wonderful blessing in our life. Just like our governor can handle things with her baby, and she should not be... I sat at a room full in a conference when she delivered that child, and I don't even want to tell you the comments that I heard go around the table that I was shocked over, and I it hurt my heart. But I admire her and her husband and her family, and it's only in America can we do these things. So that's my opinion.
Cease, I want to thank you for standing up and saying that. It's very important that people speak publicly sometimes about things they think privately. And you just did.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go down to Homer. And Laris, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call this morning. I felt that the announcement that Governor Palin's daughter had an unintended pregnancy would be a great opportunity to advocate for enhanced funding for reproductive health education and information out there on contraception and prevention of sexually transmitted infections. I know Governor Palin is an anti-abortion candidate, and that she's all for the abstinence-only type of sex education. But I'd really like us all just to look at.
Okay, I'm gonna say point B that you make. I'm not sure is completely accurate.
What would that be?
That she doesn't favor sex education.
Well, she's an abstinence-only person, an abstinence advocate, more than providing the information that young women like Bristol really could use.
Yes, I understand you're saying that, but I the way I look at it, that's sort of a knee-jerk pigeonholing kind of thing, and I'm not really sure that that's true about her.
Well, all right. Well, take it as you may. I just would think that this is an excellent opportunity for us to all advocate for women's rights in reproductive health. And
yeah, well, it's a very it's a very clear point.
I mean, lucky young woman because she's got the support of her family and all the resources that she needs to deal with this unintended pregnancy. But not all women do. And
right. I think your point, and I think it's a very good point, is that there's a cognitive dissonance going on here. That it would be very difficult and inconvenient for her to come out and start talking about how this shows the need for sex education or contraception for that matter, because that simply would not play to the constituency that the party is after, right?
Yeah, but I mean, morally and in all other ways, this is the right way to go. It's to help our young people deal with their sexual feelings and their decision-making, and I just think that, you know, I would hope the governor would just come out and advocate for, you know, more money going to family planning clinics and getting
right.
the word
but,
out there.
But you
there
know that's not going to happen, given the kind of campaign we have in the political landscape, right?
Yeah, I know it, but
okay.
Why can't I just put it out there?
Absolutely. You made your point.
You made
that's
your
a good
point.
Topic for another show.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for taking my call, Steve.
All right, Laris, thank you very much. Well, the lines are absolutely full. And Jerry McBeth, you have some observations at this point, or shall I just keep running through the calls? It's been fascinating.
No, go through the calls. This is very interesting to me.
Yes.
I'm happy to see people are reacting and feeling strongly about the issues, and hope they're all thinking about voting in the presidential election campaign.
Yes, let's go to Judy in Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hi, Steve. I just want you to know how much I appreciate your show, and thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I have been getting calls from people who live outside of Alaska, even this morning from someone whom I don't even know, with the question, tell me about Sarah.
Yeah.
And as I think many people initially, I was surprised at her nomination, and it's taken a few days for me to settle in to how I feel about it. The biggest comment I have to say is that she is untested for the kinds of issues and the leadership needed to carry this nation. I'm not talking about acting as vice president. I'm talking about the possibility, God forbid, that she would have to act as president. And I think the person in that vice presidential place needs to be someone whom we feel confident could also run our country. I like Sarah. She's energetic, courageous, smart. She's certainly ethical in the way she defines ethics. But she's untested. I haven't seen enough. It's too soon. She's not ready to be president. And that's, in fact, the possibility. That's what the vice president is there for. As you say, someone else can run the Senate. and she's there for tie-breaking. She would be there for tie-breaking only. I am concerned. It seems to me that her nomination is a ploy or a strategy to distract people from issues, from our concerns, and from addressing how things will be different. What changes exactly the McCain people would make? And I really did appreciate Obama's speech where he tried to get more specific about how and what he would do. Anyway, so my comment is, she's not yet. I don't want her president yet. Maybe someday. But
I would add to this, Judy, and I appreciate your comments, that all four of them are untested. This is a real interesting race because we do not have an incumbent, anybody who served in the office, running for the president or vice president. None of them has that level of experience.
Certainly, but she also is untested in international relations, for instance.
Right, yeah. So you're not quite in the, oh, my God, they'll eat her up alive camp, but you're kind of close. You're saying, geez, she just hasn't been seasoned enough. I'm getting that point. And then you're saying, geez, I'm a little suspicious because it's almost like waving a flag in front of us so that we don't pay attention to real issues, right?
This is true.
Yeah.
That's how I feel. And I also have had recently some little red flags come up around Sarah, like, well, how she might use high personal power to further her own personal issues. I don't understand why she put the kibosh on scientists, state scientists, giving their data to EPA about the polar bears. I don't understand why she has the state suing EPA over designating polar bears as endangered. I mean, that's not a political thing. That's a scientific thing.
Right, and it's a legit issue. Judy, thank you very much for your call. I'd like to get
thank
to some more. All right, 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK, although we have a big stack of them here to go through. Lauren in Ketchikan, it's good to hear from Ketchikan. Welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you very much.
Well, go right ahead.
All right, I'm glad to agree with a fellow political scientist, happy that people are involved and really excited about an election and having people interested in Alaska. I've taught at UAS Ketchikan and degree in political science and a lawyer, and I still have to say she's still a Republican. She asked for earmarks. She got earmarks for her town. She increased her bonding in Wasilla. And then when it came time to be governor, when she became governor, she willy-nilly cut projects throughout the state, favored her own home base, not totally, but other places lost out. I'm not a hockey mom, but I'm a soccer dad, and for 2 years she cut the funding for soccer fields in Ketchikan, so that left our kids in the Stone Age playing soccer and gravel while her kids in Wasilla had a $14 million indoor facility. So all we were asking for was $1 million, and she cut it. And that's the kind of thing that really disturbs me. She's a politician in the true sense of a politician. She was working the legislature. She was punishing those who didn't agree with her. She was rewarding those who did agree with her. And so that brings her judgment into play. And, of course, for those of us in Ketchikan who are in favor of the bridge over to Gravina, such as and people always forget, you know, Sitka has a bridge to its airport. Juneau has a bridge to the island next door. Ketchikan doesn't have a bridge to the island across the way. We're hemmed in by federal land. We have our land is very expensive, hard to build on because we don't have a flat area to build on. Gravina offers an opportunity to develop land, which is much better and cheaper for development, and it would help Ketchikan expand. And yet, we still call it the bridge to nowhere. It still was an evil thing, and she basically backstabbed all the Republicans in Ketchikan in her opening speech in Dayton by saying, "Hey, look, I am the one that said no to the bridge to nowhere." And she's not the one that said no to the bridge to nowhere. Politically, it wasn't going to sustain itself anyway, and she just used it. So she's a user, a political user. She's still a politician. And
Lauren, this is exactly why I wanted to hear from Ketchikan. I really appreciate your call.
Well, and here's the interesting thing. I'm much more upset about her cutting the turf field for soccer than I am about cutting a $400 million bridge over to Gravina. But I'm trying to give a perspective of those people in Ketchikan who were for the bridge. I actually have been opposed to the bridge my whole life. But I really thought that she showed her spots when she used the bridge in such a way, knowing that it was a national issue that she could use in her first opening speech. And I watched the whole speech. And that, when she said that about the bridge, that really twisted my stomach, because that was clearly usury. I mean, it was clearly a political move that was totally inappropriate. She was for the bridge. She's a Republican. She's a long line of Republicans in the state of Alaska who want to build the infrastructure. Don Young, Ted Stevens, everybody commendable for trying to build up the infrastructure of Alaska, electrical interties, roads, all kinds of that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And yet, then when the time comes, push comes to shove, to advocate for Alaska, she uses us to elevate herself and attempt to win more votes by showing herself to be a cost cutter when she's not.
All right, thanks, Lauren. Jerry Macbeth?
Yeah, we all want statesmen in office, and all we've got to select from are politicians, and we need to look at how effective they are. And they will support those who support them. One of the things about the Palin governorship is that she not consistently, to get legislators to prioritize their projects, to figure out which ones were most important to them, and to get some sort of statewide sense in what projects were in state interest and strong local interest or not. She didn't follow through on that as much as she could have, but she started the process. It's certainly not a perfect process when we're talking about district funding.
Right, and your point, I guess, Jerry, is also that it's just not all that out of line for a politician to claim credit for something if there's credit to be claimed for it.
And another thing about the Bridge to Nowhere is that, there was opposition in Congress. In fact, the earmarks were almost cut. They did go through, but not as designated earmarks. She had the discretion, and then what she did was essentially diverted the money to other transportation projects. She did not turn the money back to Congress. That was a sort of a half-truth that she told in her speech.
All right, Lauren, thank you very much for your call as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station.
9 out of 10 of Alaska's boating fatalities are adult males. Most drowned following an unexpected fall or capsize into cold water. Cold water can kill the unprepared, regardless of swimming ability. Wearing a life jacket can make the difference between life and death. Make your family's boating memories good ones. Always wear a life jacket when boating Alaska's cold water. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
Wow, did we ever pick the right subject for a Talk of Alaska today? We're sitting right in the middle of history, folks, and we honestly, as a people and as Alaskans, don't quite know how we feel about this. So it's great to get all this talk out there. Whatever it does for the political process, I don't really know, but it's just absolutely fascinating to hear opinion in such a raw form here, Jerry, don't you think?
Yeah, I think it's wonderful, and people are letting it all hang out. It's as it should be for a talk show.
Yes, let's go to Sitka and Elizabeth. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Elizabeth.
Good morning. I feel that we've gone through a looking glass into La La Land here. It's an incredible thing. McCain is 72 years old, and the vice presidency is of great importance to everyone. And I see this astonishing selection as a cynical and reckless and dangerous thing for all of us. And I don't really appreciate you having a rebuttal person on the program with you. Thank you.
All right, Elizabeth. Thank you very much.
No comment.
All right. Jerry McGuth, by the way, is the rebuttal person, professor of political science, University of Alaska, Fairbanks. Let's go to Chuck, joins the program from Bristol Bay. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Chuck.
Hi, Steve. I'll try to keep this as short as possible, seeing as we're running short. One of the kind of surprising things that resulted from this announcement is the amount I've been listening to just pundits out the nose. I mean, I've been listening to conservative talk radio, liberal talk radio, so-called neutral talk radio, and I can't believe the amount of bad-mouthing Alaska has gotten from this whole thing. Not only, the direct Sarah Palin connection, like how dare she consider herself qualified because she was only governor of Alaska, as though being governor of Arkansas is any better, or not only in terms of governance, but foreign policy expertise, say, or a peanut farmer from Georgia somehow has more foreign policy expertise than she does.
But, you would somewhat dispute what Jerry said. This is going to make Alaska look good. You're not seeing that.
No, if anything, I've heard so much negative disparagement dumped on Alaska. It's like how, the Alaska National Guard, her military commandership abilities, leading the Alaska National Guard, which is like almost like the Polish Army during World War II or something. I mean, I've gotten actually almost defensive of Sarah Palin through all this, even though I wouldn't vote for her, the McCain ticket at all. Because
all right, Chuck, I want to thank you very much and try and get another call in. Thanks for your call. Let's go to Deborah now, who joins the show from Girdwood. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Deborah. Hello, are you with us, Deborah? Looks like she gave up because we're getting close to the end here. Let's go to Patty then. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Patty. And so much for Patty. Okay, Marcus, it's your turn. Welcome to Talk of Alaska. Hello, Marcus, you with us?
Yeah, hello, it's Marcus.
Yes, hiya. You got about a minute here, Marcus.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'm basically concerned about Alaska. I mean, everybody is, apparently. And what I think about American politics is, like, that we have a lot of influence on money and especially oil in American politics. And I see the whole thing being kind of a fake deal, meaning, like, okay, like, the oil companies want to get Sarah Palin out of Alaska. Because right now, I think the biggest deal she did for Alaska was the push the gas line, and right now she favors the Trans-Canada. So for me, I see that Denali, the other opponent, the opponents of Trans-Canada, said, okay, let's get Palin out of Alaska, and we, you know, draw the attention to the whole election thing, and then who knows what's going on in Alaska after that. When Palin is gone, our lieutenant governor might be gone for the Senate. So, you know, who knows what's going on with the whole gas development, especially the gas pipeline. So I see a big big problem there. And that might be one of the reasons to say, like, hey, get this smart, good-looking woman out of Alaska. We got the Hillary Clinton voters, maybe some of them, and then the whole construction project gets a new...
All right.
Perspective.
Marcus, thank you so much for your call. That was a theory I had not heard. Did you ever hear that one, Jerry McBride?
Yeah, I heard that one. That's an interesting theory. You know, it fits in the broad conspiracy theory group and why they select her. I think there are any number of just real practical reasons that account for her selection.
All right. Well, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show today.
Well, it's been nice to be with you. I especially enjoyed hearing what different people throughout the state had to say about the Palin candidacy.
All right. Gerald McBreath, we'll be back again next week with Talk of Alaska. Our engineer is Goose Berry Peter, Emily Butler on the phones, Duncan Moon's our managing editor. Thank you to all the people who called who we didn't have room for on the show. We'll have to come back to it. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Award-winning news to get you out of bed in the morning. The Alaska Morning News and the Alaska Economic Report bring you the information you need for the day. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.